Aloha and good day. This is Clint Hansen with Maui Luxury Real Estate on Maui Real Estate Radio, broadcasting on 1110 AM, 98.7 FM on the KAOI Radio Group. Today we have guests Mike Molina and Byron Yap, my co-host of Axia Home Loans. Thank you so much, Mike, for meeting us here today. We wanted to talk to you and have a few questions for your bid for mayor. And so please just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you.
All right, mahalo, Clint and Byron. Appreciate being on your show as always. Just a quick bit about myself. I'm completing my seventh term on the county council, and I've been very passionate about the housing legislation over the years. I authored the Affordable Housing Fund legislation as well as the county's First Time Home Buyers Fund. So housing certainly is our number one issue here. And attainable housing. I don't know if we can use the word affordable anymore, but it's just attainable housing. And also for
No
our
doubt.
unsheltered working too, we can't leave them behind. So my reasons for mayor is I feel we need leadership that's going to listen, leadership that's all about being open, accountable, and responsive, and not being afraid to maintain open, positive relationships, no matter where people stand on the issues. And I've always demonstrated that in my years on the council. And it's all about truly working collaboratively because of the legislation that I spoke of. And I've been very proud of the legislation I've put out, not only with housing, but also with the environment. But a lot of it was possible due to doing a lot of outreach with the community. I think any candidate that claims that he or she has the answers alone, to me, that's a red flag because there's a lot of resources out there. I'm not afraid to humble myself and reach out for help. And to me, leaders should be facilitators and not dictators. And so those are
Oh.
just some of my reasons for running. I think it's important that people not feel afraid of approaching their leader or their elected officials. Because after all, you pay our salaries and I'm obligated to help you. And to me, we should provide the best customer service possible. Was that a mouthful for you, Clint?
Hey, Mike, is this your first chance at run? Is this your first time ever running for mayor, or have you tried before?
Well, this is my first opportunity at trying for mayor. And let me tell you, it is quite different than running for council. But I look forward to all kinds of challenges. I think to keep yourself going and motivated, I think it's important that you try different things. And to me, you never lose when you try. To me, you fail when you don't try.
Yeah. That actually is perfect. Your intro is one of the first questions. You say that, you want to help instill affordable housing on the island. And my first two questions are basically based around that. I mean, we're in the middle of an absolute crisis of a situation. Many places across the United States are right now dealing with this inaffordability of affordable housing as a result of artificial scarcity from lack of supply. But it's been an ongoing issue in Hawaii that's gotten worse and worse and worse over the last 30 years. And so my first question is, what are your plans to support push for workforce housing projects like Dream City? Maui residents only, where an owner must reside on the property and must live in it for like a period of time, 10 years or so. And of course, no rentals out of a property like that. So go ahead, tell us some of your plans.
Okay, great. Well, I got a lot I can share, but I don't know how much time I got. But let me just first say, I think it with the county, we have existing inventory of lands that we can consider, and maybe a RFP or a request for performance from say a developer to build on the properties. The county could pay for the infrastructure to help offset the cost of the developer. They build the homes, and maybe we could look at getting a property manager to go and collect the mortgages or the rents if we decide to build rentals in that way. We can also look at rehabilitating existing structures. I think one good example was the old Maui Community College dorms that was rehabilitated recently, where you could move families in. So I think there's opportunities there. And of course, establish public-private partnerships with developers and large landowners to see where we can acquire lands or possibly get lands donated. I mentioned earlier about the unsheltered. The possibility of acquiring lands where basically they could have their own community, like much like I think it's the Nanakuli model, I think, or the Waianae model on Oahu, where basically the residents police themselves, and if we can get wraparound services near them, I'm optimistic. I believe it could work. So I think there's a lot of tools in the toolbox that we need. Currently, I got the support of my fellow colleagues to do a home restoration grant program modeled after legislation in LA. It's basically where if you qualify, you have an old dilapidated home and you don't have the funds, the county would give you a $30,000 grant to do whatever repairs you need so the home can be rehabilitated and someone can move back in. I mean, it helps at least lower, you know, addressing the inventory shortage and also takes away a potential eyesore in the neighborhood. So it's a pilot program that we're looking at. I'm currently working on the legislation. So, you know, we need as many tools in the toolbox. And for me, I'm sort of very restless when it comes to the housing issue. You just have to keep moving and look at what other communities are doing, and mm-hmm. hopefully what works there can work for our own community.
Well, one of the things, past, go ahead.
You know, I used to work for a developer. One of the things we always heard or always in the community is the county is like the enemy, or, you know what I'm saying, to the developer. And, mm-hmm. you know, is there in your administration, if you were elected mayor, are you going to try to change that perception where, hey, you know, try to get the developers to think differently? You know what I'm saying? Because there's always that fear. When I think about an idea, when I build, it could take 10, 15 years.
Well, good question, Byron. Definitely, we need to expedite the permit process. Recently, an audit was done of the county's planning department zoning division and found a lot of deficiencies. And what was interesting were comments were coming from the employees saying they need more training. And I guess they weren't happy with management. So I think that's one area I would definitely look at addressing. And yeah, I definitely want to reach out to the developers, not create an us versus them type of relationship. And the same goes with working with the council, because, you know, the administration makes the proposals to the council, but it's the council who, passes the appropriate zoning for any future project. So
I know a lot of developers and general people are all for increasing the cost of permits just to facilitate the process better, because time is money, as opposed to something that takes, you know, anywhere from 1 to 15 years, you know, could be put to a more national standard level of, you know, a few months, so long as there is an incentive program as opposed to just a standard pay structure, so that you're, you know, rewarded on proper processing, you know, as opposed to just collecting a paycheck every month. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people would be for that because it's a nominal increase compared to the amount of time associated mm-hmm. with permitting. But that being said, I mean, one of the issues that you touched upon, it hasn't seemed to be addressed in the last 30 years, is infrastructure improvements. Mm-hmm. I think developers have a heck of a battle in front of them to put those infrastructures, because it's not really their duty to do stuff like that. I mean, Kihei was built off of, you know, developers willing to, you know, hoof the bill and time and effort to do something like that, but that is not generally a standard across the U.S. So what would you be to support and push for infrastructure improvements and issuing bonds, as opposed to, you know, making the responsibility and cost and time of the developer? Because to me, you know, it's somebody's entire career, 15 to 20 years, to put those in, you know, entitlements and infrastructure in place, as opposed to the county, you know, who tries to, you know, dictate what can be built in an area. But if they're not invested in that, I don't see them as having really any ability or authority to do so. So that way, you know, you can have that authority, and then the taxes, because this is basically, you know, next to free money. When you issue a bond, we have one of the best bond ratings in the US at, you know, less or slightly above 2%. So with that opportunity, you could do a massive amount of infrastructure, lower the cost for building, and then they could pass those savings on to, you know, the homeowner.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Clint, on that topic of infrastructure, you know, with the we've expanded the uses of funds in the Affordable Housing Fund for developers to use. Actually, I think it already existed where with approval from the council for a 100% affordable housing project or a 201H, monies could be made available for developers to address the infrastructures. So that would offset their costs. And I agree with you. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we're in a time now, the realities are the county has to step in and partner with developers, because now with the cost of supplies, I mean, it's a It's tough with a developer, and the reality is developers have to make money to stay in business. And I know there's that perception of developers that, oh, they're all, you know, money hungry, this and that, but there's a lot of expenses. And who's going to build the homes? I mean, I don't think the county is ready at this point in time to have our own construction division to build homes. I mean, I'd like to see it, but right now, I don't think we're quite there yet. I'd prefer to leave that in the hands of the developers. We, you know, contract out to them, cost share on the infrastructure, even provide the land. But in return, the homes can be left affordable in perpetuity. And then once the, you know, for example, we get a lease agreement done with a developer, say 30, 40, 50 years, once everything expires, whatever is there, you know, it becomes the property of the county, right?
Yeah. I like that because it's one of the programs that my family helped fund and create was Nahali o Maui. You know, we put the initial investment forward and helped form the board for that community land trust, which is a fabulous concept. And the best part is the majority of the people who purchase into this leasehold property were shared ownership and training for home ownership comes into play. The majority of those buyers actually trade up into the open market. And of course, it's affordability and perpetuity, which is fantastic. You know, obviously, there should be a full gamut of property ownership, not just that. But I think that, you know, a public-private partnership that you're mentioning makes a ton of sense.
Mm-hmm. Right. Leading into this, a couple friends have asked me and said, hey, you know, after COVID, we've noticed a lot of more unsheltered out there. You know, you're seeing that. What direction or what thoughts do you have on, number one, is the unsheltered, what we can do to help them get sheltered? And number the other thing is, you know, with the unsheltered, I don't know if you've noticed the explosion of all these vacant cars, you know, these destroyed cars all over the roads. Now I'm seeing them on the highway by Kihei. What are your thoughts, ideas, you know, on that?
Well, let's start first with the unsheltered. I think we need to move in a direction of tiny homes. I think like the homes you see on Waialae, maybe expand that, getting securing either county lands, using county lands, or working a deal with a large landowner to establish more tiny homes. That's one option. Also, I've heard the use of old mats and containers as a temporary shelter that could work. But you know what's interesting? In talking to some of the unsheltered, along with their need for shelter itself, it's also the need for charging stations for their cell phones. And the unsheltered who are working folks who are living out of their cars and have kids, they need a Wi-Fi, you know, for the kids to do their homework as well. So one idea I had was to open up our community centers where for like maybe from 2 to 6 o'clock, families can bring their kids in to do their homework and they have access to Wi-Fi. So I think we need to, you know, look at not only the food and clothing aspect, but, you know, establishing areas that we can do a charging station or, and also the other night we had a forum in Kihei and maybe establishing a homeless, a shelter, temporary shelter for the homeless, like Kahale Akeola, like we have in Central Maui and Lahaina. I think we need one for South Maui now. Over in Paia, the police are using a mobile bus that comes in about once a week that provides services to the folks that are in need. So I think we can expand that, maybe add a couple of more of those buses. I mean, it's a tough nut to crack. I mean,
are you referring to the mobile showers?
Well, I like mobile showers. Well, they have these mobile buses that a person can come in and get medical work done. I mean, you know, medical services. Yeah. So I would be in favor of expanding that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a person shared with me, we've got a lot of folks that have come in from the mainland USA, and I don't know how true it is, but supposedly whatever community they're coming from, they're given a one-way ticket to go wherever they want to. And I mean, who wouldn't want to come to Maui or Hawaii, right, where the weather's year round? I would hope that if that is the case, that we someday look at a potential class action lawsuit against these states or counties that are doing this. It's sort of like they're passing off their kuleana to us, but you know, we're having to absorb the cost and whatever the impacts, because I think at some point it's got to stop or at least be slowed down. But first and foremost, I'm really concerned about our working homeless or unsheltered, because these folks are doing the right thing, but they just simply can't pay the, you know, afford the rents or attain a home.
Yeah, and that's important, because I you know, a lot of them are working unsheltered, that the ideas. And of course, what you're discussing with us today is not in concrete, but these are just free flowing ideas you have, right? And you're going to be expanding on them if you became mayor. I mean, I guess if you had a priority list, is this on your top five priority list?
Yeah, I guess housing in at all levels, you know, and especially housing for our folks that provide critical services to our communities, like police, fire, teachers. If there's no housing opportunities for those folks, they're going to take their services elsewhere. And a lot of them are young, you know, Kamaaina families too that would like to stay here, but because they can't find a home to rent or own, they have no choice but to move to places like Las Vegas or Arizona. And, you know, it's a tragedy in some ways. And then as our population ages, lives longer, we need healthcare professionals to, take care of the older population. So it's really that bad on all levels, you know, at this point. So that's why for me, it's my number one priority, along with everything else. But this one is the big one.
So that being said, and, you know, ironing out some of the kinks associated with the permitting process, they did, of course, create and are transferring to the MAP system. Obviously, we're dealing with moving from CubaNet to the MAPs, and there is inevitably issues associated with that transfer process. So it might be a little early to say, but do you have any plans for streamlining the permitting process, more specific to what you said earlier about, management systems?
Well, you know, I'm not a high tech person, but I certainly would find the folks that are good at it. I do believe in technology, and technology just evolves. So you have to constantly look for the best equipment or best software that can reach the objectives that you need. So, but again, I'm being honest with everybody. I'm not a high tech person, but whatever we can do to expedite the process, I'm all for. And of course, you'd have to go and work with the council and get buy-in from them. So as I alluded to earlier, the relationship between the mayor and council is very, very critical. If you have a bumpy relationship, you may not get what you want. And in the end, the only folks that are hurt are the citizens. So you have to have a lot of buy-in, a lot of give and take, and do it respectfully. I mean, if you're going to disagree respectfully. And I haven't seen that type of exchanges from the current mayor with the council. I mean, it's gotten a little bit better, but I think once you alienate fellow elected officials, it's tough to overcome, but you just have to work through it the best you can. But I've always preached working respectfully with people and treating people with dignity. So that way, all ideas are welcome. And I think, Byron, you alluded to about the fact that, you know, making sure that, you know, all ideas are heard and not just be linking yourself with one team and, you know, making others feel disenfranchised. Because right now, I think there's the public's trust and confidence in government, local government especially, is eroded. And if I'm elected mayor, I'm going to do my part to try and bring back public trust and confidence in county government, because otherwise it's hard to move forward when the public, the general public, doesn't have trust and confidence in their elected officials.
Or involvement.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's one of the things people don't really realize, that, you know, some of their faith and distrust in government is their lack of participation in it. You know, there needs to be more opportunities for, you know, people to run. And, you know, I think it's pretty hard because, you know, I don't know how much you get paid for county council, but it's a lot of work for what you're doing there. Yeah. And it's oftentimes, you know, less than thankless of a job. So, yeah. I mean, I think the people that come in and take the time to actually, you know, testify and learn about the laws or, you know, the process that council goes through and the mayor, and make their voice heard, is going to make Maui a better place. So long as it we're willing to communicate and not fight, you know, we must be willing to hear each other. And just like you're saying that, you know, council and the mayor need to have a positive relationship between each other. Same thing goes with its members and the community at large with, you know, council and the mayor. So it's good that those mechanisms are there. And I got to say, I love blue jeans. It's made the process so much easier. Yeah. Hopefully we never, ever get rid of that.
And honestly, when we first took it on, I, I guess I'm an old dog that needs to be taught new tricks every now and then. I was a little apprehensive, but once I got hooked on it, I love it. And it's a great way for bringing in more people, people who normally would not have come into the council chambers for whatever reasons. You know, maybe they live out in a remote area, or sometimes there's very little to no parking near the county building. So this way, this what this type of technology has provided, much more access to our citizens. So I'm with you, Clint. I love it.
Now, one of the things on your website, the website votemikemolina.com, I see on your issues that you're going, that your top priority issues is the diversifying of Maui's economy. Mm-hmm. You know, because right now it seems like 90 cents out of the dollar is tourist related. Mm-hmm. You know, if something changes, we could have a devastating effect. How can we prepare for the future of this diversifying, or what are your ideas on diversifying our economy?
Okay, well, two things, primarily expanding agriculture. You know, growing up in Maui in the 60s and 70s, we never thought sugarcane and pineapple would ever disappear. Mm-hmm. But now we're just almost totally dependent primarily on tourism. So I think we need to reinvigorate the agriculture industry. You know, and some ways to do that is, well, I think just in broad terms, I'd like to see us become food exporters as well as, you know, feeding ourselves. So I think subsidies for our farmers and our ranchers, I think it's, I see it as money that's well worth spending. Maybe establishing some type of co-ops or arrangements where farmers can rent equipment at a somewhat affordable price, rather than having to buy the heavy equipment on their own, which is a tremendous expense. Why not set up a system where farmers can go on and rent equipment and mm-hmm. rather than own it? And
yeah, also, specialized equipment, you know,
exactly.
Harvesting specifically. Harvesting. You know, one of the big opportunities on the island is olives. You know, it's of course a long term and monetary investment to grow, but we have ideal conditions. There's a lot of different methods for harvesting, but the biggest cost in Hawaii is, of course, labor. And if we can invest in the machinery associated with harvesting, it basically throws an upside down umbrella under the tree, shakes it, and you know the fruit falls off, and it can easily be processed for oil and other things. So I love that idea for diversifying our ag product, but simply putting the laws in place, I think, are another part. We've got the production, you know, of CBD and things of that nature on the island, but no legal means to productize and sell it. I mean, for health reason, I've always, there's this lie that we've all come to believe that small amounts of alcohol are good for us, but it's actually not true. Mm-hmm. You know, alcohol is a poison. It will always be bad for you, no matter how small of an amount you have. And I've wanted to convert to like non-alcoholic CBD beer. Unfortunately, you can't import it, you can't make it, and you can't sell it here in Hawaii. Those little, you know, so to me, there's these little tiny issues that need to be ironed out and have a directive. So if we want to diversify our economy, we need to work on, you know, talking to producers like Garrett at Maui Brewing so that, you know, say, hey, how can we help you make and move more product? And because he's got to be one of the few people who are producing and exporting an actual locally produced item to the rest of the world. So, you know, I think that it's definitely a time coming.
Yeah, maybe look at liberalizing our laws and regulations a little bit. Because, I mean, when you look at Hawaii historically, very liberal, very open, much more tolerant with certain issues or and other matters compared to
we were the first for medical marijuana, but we still can't, you know, it was so hard compared to most of the other places.
true. But I think what's also critical is food sustainability because of our location. I think, you know, if we ever have some issues that occur with our shipping lines, our heroes are going to be the farmers and the ranchers. I've heard estimates that if the shipping lanes were cut off, we can maybe survive for about a week or two. Yeah. With the amount of food that we currently have on island. I think that's going to be a big issue. I would like to develop a food security plan, if I'm mayor. I guess we saw with the effects of COVID and how, and even still right now, look at the cost of, to deliver foods, goods and services. It all has a domino effect. Everything goes up, gasoline, I've supported our congressional delegation. I believe it's Congressman Case to look at the Jones Act, where I guess it's a mandatory law that all goods and services shipped to Hawaii have to be on American-made vessels. The problem is there's not enough American-made vessels out there. And that's why we're incurring shipping delays and, you know, higher shipping costs. So all I'm asking is just look at it. Maybe the law needs to be potentially reformed. I've gotten static from, you know, industry folks about my going public with this. But, you know, the folks on the street are hurting. You know, gasoline goes up. I mean, the other day I bought a can of Lysol, and which is typically about maybe $4, $5, maybe a year ago, it was $8, almost $9. I mean, even little stuff like that, I notice, you know, and for a lot of folks, every dollar counts. So we need to look at every possible way we can at least stabilize costs, because if it continues to just escalate, we're going to have a bigger gap between the haves and the have-nots on this island. Oh, and one more thing with regards to diversifying our economy. I'd like to develop some partnerships with some either healthcare agencies or educational institutions to bring training opportunities to Maui, have our kids be trained here, sort of like a farming system, if you will, train them here rather than the parents having to incur expenses or the students incurring expenses of going off island. For example, in the healthcare professions, I think there's opportunities for that where we could nurture and foster that the training here for all of our aspiring healthcare professionals and high tech professionals. So, but again, it does come down to housing too. You can train them, but if they have no housing opportunities, they're going to take their talents elsewhere. So, which is again,
the brain drain.
The brain, you got it. You hit it on the head. Nailed it on the head, Clint.
One of the things I can't remember where I saw it, but it's always been in the back of my mind, is Hawaii and Maui included has been a non-small business friendly, you know what I'm saying? Non-small business friendly environment or political system, because the small businesses seem to be the ones that bear the brunt or get beaten up. Is there any thoughts to that, you know, or have you heard that, or is there something in your plan for, hey, let's look at the small businesses because they're the lifeblood of Hawaii or Maui?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we need to work with our state legislators to maybe establish some tax credits and tax incentives, because yeah, we'd have to help our small businesses. They're the backbone of our economy. I grew up in a small business environment, and I can only imagine how difficult it is now when you have to deal with insurance and just the cost to rent. So I will certainly continue to reach out with, say, organizations like the Chamber of Commerce to see where government can ease up on their regulations. I remember from Economic Fast that old term, laissez-faire, let business operate with minimal government interference. I believe in that. You have to provide our small businesses a little bit more freedom, see what we can do to make it more business friendly. And I guess maybe tax breaks or incentives is a start.
Yep. I think taxation is definitely interesting part.
And even lowering the tax rates for business properties, that could be one, that could help.
Well, that's one of the things I find interesting too, because, you know, I've always wanted to see somebody that's willing to ensure that hotels pay their fair share of property taxes. I mean, we see property taxes increasing dramatically, you know, across the island, but the disparity between what the hotels and regular people pay continue to grow, you know, on the per square footage. I mean, there's lots of local people that own vacation rentals that are here, and their per square foot and, you know, overall assessment is dramatically higher than what the hotels are paying. And hotels get multitude of opportunities to, you know, drain, you know, get income. And that income that they get is generally distributed among their shareholders and their businesses, as opposed to the individuals who, you know, live here that own vacation rentals and or that own here and visit that re-spend that money on island. I'm always surprised at how much less hotels pay by comparison. I mean, during the pandemic, they were given a tax cut, yep, while everybody else had a tax increase, which, yep, I understand the modus operandi is to basically, you know, discourage vacation rentals in order to encourage residents here. Of course, these are properties that have been permitted and allowed for vacation rentals since, you know, before the 80s. And to me, you know, when we have these massive corporations here, that should be the focal point, since the majority of that money exits the island as opposed to stay to foster, you know, local employment. And same thing, I mean, I'd like to see somebody look towards protecting us from, you know, Blackstone, for example, which I believe they just recently acquired hundreds of bank-owned properties that are now not going to be entering the average real estate market. Instead, they're going to be kept and rented in order to diversify their portfolio, because, you know, there is a across the nation a massive shortfall. So that's a scarce resource and a good store of value, which is why they're doing it. But of course, it's at the alienation of the local people here. They're not going to have that affordable housing. And then also, it's a little terrifying that a large corporation can basically set whatever price through a sense of, you know, housing monopoly. A lot easier to do on an island than anywhere else.
Oh yeah, definitely. I'm with you on that, Clint. And you know, I'll, just looking at my campaign, I'm reluctant. I've never reached out to any large offshore corporations for monies. And you know, when you talk to people on the street, there's this fear that Maui's being sold off, you know, and there's just going to be this bigger gap between the haves and the have-nots. And I believe, you know, we use whatever mechanisms to for those that can pay, make them pay, because our consequences or unintended consequences of these folks' actions is just pricing people out of the market. And especially Kamainas, generations of young Kamainas who've grown up here, you think it's their birthright and they should have that opportunity to stay here. They simply can't with what's happening right now. I mean, you're having the super rich movie here too, you know? I mean, we have low tax rates, I mean, compared to other counties. So recently in the budget, we did increase the tax rate for non-homeowner occupied in that class. So I think we should create maybe a disincentive for people coming here to, you know, offshore folks to invest. And
I thought the tier system was kind of funny. Where, yeah, you know, they're like, oh, we're going to have these tiers of real estate ownership. It's like, well, guess what? Now the next tier of ownership is the average house price, you know, and, yeah, and people are in this next tier of taxation, you know, with no fault of their own. So, yeah, so, you know, as a result of the average price is increasing. So it ends, yeah, up punishing the local people, yeah, you know, when already it was built into the mechanism of pricing, where if you have somebody that has a $500,000 property compared to $1 million property, they're still paying twice the taxes, even though their rate is exactly the same. Mm-hmm. So I did find that tiered system funny, you know, to punish a particular class of citizen compared to, you know, just having a use-based tax like we've always had. But for taxes, how it goes, right now we have such a large percentage of people who work from anywhere and are working from the best place on the planet here on Maui, and, you know, payroll taxes and things of that nature, they're using the local infrastructure and they're not paying the fair share of taxes. So yeah, that I think is undoubtedly something that should be addressed.
I agree. Totally.
Being that you've been, one of the things that I can see people, or the question I would have is, Mike, you've been in politics for a while. You know, are you in that old buddy network, or are you going to bring these fresh ideas, you know, with not that, because, you know, sometimes, you know, people get in there and they get comfortable. Mm-hmm. You know, we want, you know, we, most of the people, at least that I talk to, are like, hey, we need people to bring new ideas. Mm-hmm. Are you, you know, as a mayoral candidate, when you become mayor, is that your whole thing is, hey, I'm not going to look at what I did in the past. I'm going to move forward because the world is changing. Tell me what your thoughts are, Mike, on that.
Well, Byron, you hit that on the head. I've never believed in resting on my laurels. You have to just keep moving forward. And, you know, politics is a type of business where, what have you done for me lately? You know, it's funny, in politics, you do one wrong thing, people never forget. You do a million good things, people appreciate it, but it's not remembered as well as something that you did wrong. But I'm always welcome to fresh ideas. As I mentioned to you earlier, I love looking at what other counties are doing, thinking outside of the box, which is one reason for this most recent legislation that I proposed for the home restoration grants to help rehabilitate existing homes. So, yeah, I'm all about, and I'd like to get, if I'm mayor, in my administration, I love to bring in folks with new, young ideas and not go with the status quo and not take a cannot do attitude. It's more of a can do attitude because the world changes. And I know sometimes we get caught up in our comfort zone and we're used to doing things a certain way. To be progressive or to have more forward thinking, you have to be able to adapt to change and be able to accept constructive criticism that, hey, maybe it, you know, your methodology worked before, but it's a different time. You need to be open and try this and not be so resistant to change. Because, you know, when you look at successful communities through the process of, I guess, evolution, you know, with the exchange of ideas and the learning experience, where I believe learning is about reciprocating, you know, I learn from you, you learn from me. I think that's the best way communities can move forward between elected officials and their constituents, to have this open exchange and not be afraid to say, hey, I'm wrong, or maybe your way is better. You know, so that's pretty much my mantra. Is how I would operate as a leader.
And I know we've covered earlier, and I don't want to miss it because everybody's going to think it's all development here, is the environment. You know what I'm saying? Is what is your stance or what is your position? Because, you know, we have, you know, shorelines getting, you know, smaller, things like that. Besides the development portion, what are you going to do to ensure that our environment is healthy? You know, that what are your thoughts, Mr. Molina?
Well, I'll continue to keep my doors open with environmental organizations. Past administrations had some very, from what I understand or hear, they had some very difficult moments between the two when it came to the environment. I'm the opposite because our environment is part of our economy. And I grew up in Maui at a time when it was very different, much more pristine environment than it is now. And of course, now with climate change, shoreline erosion, sea level rise, it's a reality. The way I see it, I think we need to have a management plan where we have to just move away from shoreline development, build more inside, more mauka. So I think all of that needs to be implemented and worked on. And I know some folks believe, yeah, we can worry about it later. I think we need to address it now and stop kicking the can down the road. So I'm certainly mindful of that. And any projects that are built, and I'm sure with the help of the council, they're going to make sure that it's done with minimal impacts on the environment. So I know there's this debate where, you know, maybe we should loosen up some of our regulations, but we have to find a balance there because we don't want Maui to turn to become so urbanized like a Honolulu, for example. I mean, that's the one reason why a lot of people like here on Maui.
To me, reducing, you know, regulation isn't really so much a problem. Oftentimes it's the funding. I mean, I know that Kahana has the tentative plans to put, you know, coastal sea erosion mechanisms in place like groins, so that when wave action comes, it actually deposits sand as opposed to eroding it away. And it's a very simple, straightforward process. Of course, there is, you know, 50, 50, 60 different government, state, and federal agencies you have to go through. And it's literally one federal agency that's the reason that instead of it taking, you know, 2 years, it takes 15 years to go through from poor funding, because you go in and it has to be a hurdle that gets addressed. Yeah. And, you know, because they don't have the manpower to process it, we just sit stagnated and unable to do simple wall repairs or emplacement of groins and whatnot. So I, you know, a lot of people get mad at these people who put boulders in the way to protect their own homes. But I mean, if you are about to lose everything and it's just one government agency that you've been trying to work with for 8 years and you're 1 year away from your, you know, house collapsing, I can understand the desperation. So, I mean, I think Hawaii as a coastal community needs to come together and get the federal support to properly fund these so that the process to protect ourselves is in place. I mean, I think that, you know, we should work towards environmentally soundly, like groins as opposed to seawalls, work towards these options. But, you know, obviously coastal retreat or managed retreat is another option. So what is your thought on managed retreat?
Yeah, I think, as I mentioned earlier, we need to work towards that, you know, refrain from building on the shorelines, maybe setbacks and boundaries need to be reset. It's just a matter of time. So we should address it now rather than later. So, I'm not an environmental expert, but I certainly will, I can see it, having grown up here. I remember, for example, shoreline in Paia. I guess maybe was it out near Sprecklesville, where there was a lime kiln many years ago growing up. But now you look, you've seen how much shoreline erosion there is now. So it's shrinking. And so, yeah, definitely manage retreat. We need a plan right now, and at least moving forward with it, starting it,
I think if you're going to be doing, at least retreat, manage retreat, there should certainly be some sort of mechanism in place so that there's investment and incentive into at least maintaining taxable incomes
You mentioned Kahana
things.
earlier. Maybe the mechanism CFDs, I think it's called Community Facilities District, where the property
That's
owners will
awesome.
call
That
share.
bond.
That could work. That could help with addressing the concerns from property owners affected by shoreline or sea level rise.
And sea level rise has not historically been the issue that we're dealing with. I mean, sea level rise is really something more into the future. The amount of sea level rise that we've experienced thus far in the last like 30, 40 years is minimal, within inches. But people don't really realize this. It's not so much the water melting and making the oceans higher. That is a small a portion. It's really the individual molecules of seawater. I mean, seawater is volumetric. It's a massive, massive amount. And as temperatures increase, the individual molecules expand ever so slightly. So that's where the majority of sea level, and as temperatures raise, it's a gradient effect. So as it goes up, then there's much more of an effect comparatively to that to what the amount of melting water goes in from the lack of glaciers. So I mean, I think that's part of something that people don't realize. Even if it was all the additional water on all the ice melted and went in to the oceans, it would be a nominal effect. It's really those molecules that are growing that are the main effect. Of course, what Hawaii is dealing with is more erosion and the fact that a lot of these structures are built on sandy coastlines. So, I mean, to me, if we're trying to protect the environment, we want to do everything we can to prevent these places from collapsing into the ocean because the amount of pollutants that would be put in there would be absolutely devastating, even if it was just one building. The demolition process alone is going to be so unbelievably costly. I people will just simply abandon and cause bankruptcy before they would ever deal with the problem. So certainly, if there's going to be a retreat, it needs to be incentivized. I don't think it should be a punishment-based system. It should be something where it's an opportunity to make Maui a better place as opposed to, punish people for the fact that they have, oceanfront property. That being said, Byron, didn't you have a question more specifically associated with brain drain in Hawaii?
With what? Brain drain?
Yeah.
I did. I know about no. I don't know about brain drain, but I did have. I want to go back to that because the noticeable thing that I've seen, because I drive from my house from Maui Lani to Kihei every day to my office, and is all the abandoned cars. We didn't really touch up on that. Is there a reason why we have to see that car there 30 days, 40 days? You know what I'm saying? That we know that was burned or whatever.
I know it's strange as it sounds. We've been told that, I guess, under the law, okay, first the police will come and tag the vehicle. Then there's a time period that the county has to wait before, actually picking it up, because there may be somebody out there who'd like to claim it, and they may not have been aware. So I'm not sure what that length of time may range, anywhere between 2 weeks to 30 days before the county can tow it. So there's those legal issues as to why it just kind of sits out there for a little while, even though you see that yellow tag on there, designated as a potential abandoned vehicle. But I guess in years past, the county may have picked up the vehicle a bit early, and someone's came to the county and said, "Hey, wait a minute, yeah, I left it out there, but it's still mine, and I still want to claim it." So that may have been some of the reasons why the department or the administration decided, okay, we're going to wait a few couple of weeks, 30 days before we even pick it up.
Now, one of the things I've noticed, or I've read a lot about, and I'm watching Honolulu, how they're responding to it, is the uptick in crime now. What we're seeing is an uptick in crime throughout Oahu, these smash and grabs, you know, these, you know, stealing cars, you know, whatever's happening, there's an uptick going on. As a mayor, is that going to be one of your priorities, is to make sure we don't fall into this where our elderly are the prey, or our small business are being a prey? You know, are you going to increase police force, or are you going to look at all ideas to make sure we don't fall into this, you know, this LA, San Francisco kind of thing?
Yeah. Well, you know, right now it's difficult to attract police officers right now. Again, it may be
housing.
Housing, exactly.
Everything comes to housing.
Yeah. And the compensation, I mean, in a high cost of living area. You know, my police department and fire department, they've got great, excellent training programs. And it's unfortunate after a couple of years, they leave for better opportunities on the mainland. And in some ways, you can't blame them. So I think it's incumbent upon the mayor and the council to support the needs of the department financially. And again, do our best and hopefully, you know, recruit as many individuals out there and make it attractive. One incentive that I would like to see, I guess they do it on the Big Island where the officers can use their own cars, buy their own cars, and then they get reimbursed for expenses. I mean, I've heard that being mentioned to me by some frontline officers as something to consider. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think it's important that we just continue to educate the public. And the one advantage of living on an island is, you know, police and the members of the community are more likely closely related. So I don't think you see as much confrontation as you do on the mainland, where in big cities, you have officers that are coming out from rural areas. So you don't have that close relationship like you would have here on Maui. But maybe the spinoff on the media is that, you know, there's not enough officers. So maybe the laws are too lenient. So you like Byron, you're mentioning all these smash and grabs. It's sort of like, well, what have I got to lose, right? Take my chances. If I get caught, probably just get a slap in the wrist. Maybe we need to look at stiffening the penalties a little bit to mm-hmm. help potentially deter. I mean, if you can deter one person from committing a crime, I mean, that's progress if the laws are stiff enough for the consequences.
I really like the new police chief, and I'm really excited for the direction that he's taking Maui. And obviously it's a long process to go through. Mm-hmm. Actually, I work with MPD Teen Academy because I also own the paintball field out in Olawalu. So mm-hmm. we run scenarios out there. We give them the field for free and equipment and stuff like that to, you know, let them do routine traffic stops and hostage situations and all sorts of potential things, you know, situations that might seem benign, escalating rapidly, or, you know, a tense situation actually being benign. You know, it's important to train for those things. And more importantly, I like how, and the reason I support it is because it works towards creating Maui's community and pulling from the resources and people we have here, you know, as opposed to these people having to move out because they have the family connections and the resources locally to, you know, flourish on Maui compared to bringing people in who are walking away from family and friends and networks in the mainland. It could be a very scary proposition, especially with the total lack of affordable housing. So that being said, though, you know, one of the reasons I like the current police chief is because of the lack of nepotism. You know, there is, you know, somebody coming in who's experienced and knowledgeable about what to do to reform a system and doesn't have those long, you know, stemming ties, so they can really start and weed out the corruption, which has been a really big issue on Oahu. And, you know, you've seen council and Congress and everybody, FBI coming in, and I want to make sure that never happens in Maui. So I love this as an opportunity to make Maui a better place. But that being said, Maui doesn't have any nepotism laws. I mean, we don't. I mean, there's like, you know, auntie, uncle, grandpa, you know, like they like, oh, I'll get you a job, you know, come on in. And I'm kind of surprised to find that out, that there isn't any nepotism laws. I mean, it's kind of cool because, you know, we're very family oriented, but I think it is a potential breeding ground for, you know, corruption.
Yeah, it's I guess, as they say, the optics. And but again, too, you live on a small island, so it's hard not to be related to someone, so to speak. Yeah, but and I think departments are trying their best because, like, you know, just in our own county departments, you have fathers who happen to be the supervisors of their sons, or moms who are their daughters. I mean, or their relatives, you know. So
and I think that's fine so long as the hiring authority or hiring is not directly from them, you know.
Sure. Hey, Mike, my last question is this. Why are you running for mayor? Why are you personally running for mayor? And why, the second part of it is, why should someone take a look or vote for you?
Okay, good question. Well, again, as I mentioned in my opening, is I bring experience and but also more a collaborative leadership style, someone that listens with empathy, someone that again believes primarily in an open, accountable, and responsive government. The buck will stop with me. That's the way I see it. No finger pointing. It's all about welcoming new ideas, not being afraid to try new things. And I'm certainly the people I hire will share the same value system that I have. I want them to be very customer service oriented, and again with the ultimate goal of bringing trust and confidence back to the public. Because again, I see us as truly to be truly considered a public servant. You are there to serve and not to dictate. You're there to facilitate. And I invite people to look at my legislative record. And if you talk to a lot of people, with my own office, for example, we help a lot of people outside of our district. And we're more than happy to do that. Because, some people say, oh, should I only go to my area council member? I say, no, if you want help from me, maybe you may not be comfortable with your area council member, or you may not know him or her. Please come to us, because we're here to serve you. So for me, it's all about being a true public servant, and I would certainly ask for everybody's consideration. And I've got some ideas, as I mentioned, and which not only includes housing but economic diversification, and of course the environment, and of course infrastructure and public safety are big issues for me. So that's why I would ask you, anyone out there who's listening, to please consider me. Again, I'm not big money. And if you look at the campaign spending records, you'll see some of the other candidates are getting a lot of big money from off-island sources. I mean, it's their choice. But I use that term. It's the optics. You talk to people these days, they're very, uncomfortable with candidates that are getting big money that's coming in from off-island, because the question becomes, who do you as an elected leader will serve first? Who will be your master? The person that gives you that big $4,000 donation, or the person that doesn't give you that donation? I mean, the question becomes, who's going to have, will the accessibility to you be equal? Who is that elected official going to listen to first? I mean, in a perfect world, you're supposed to listen to everybody. But again, those who give big money to an elected official, it could have a polarizing effect, if you will. I mean, and there's that belief or that perception that, he's that elected official is supporting this person because when you look back, they gave him a lot of money and potential influence. So, and the reality is when somebody donates big money to you, there's an expected return. I mean, I don't think a lot of people are giving money, big money to candidates or saying, I'm just giving this big money because I like you. There is an expected return down the road for something, and what that is remains to be seen. So I've just chosen to be grassroots, basically.
That's an important point. So I think you make that because, people do have campaign contributions, and that can be an issue going forward. And when what happens to it? I mean, obviously, there's been issues in Hawaii with the new registration rules in order to create transparency. And of course, just a simple complication of creating those accounts and making everything transparent. I think it's part of the reason that a lot of this corruption has been rooted out in other parts of Hawaii. Completely unrelated to that, I wanted to ask one thing just so that all our questions are fair between all our mayoral candidates. And one of the ones that we skipped over was the role associated with corporate counsel and, the interview process of, having a law or a rule generated and then going to corporate counsel and, making people necessarily accountable and to address the problem as opposed to, trying to defend themselves away from dealing a problem. That being said, injection wells are a very, tentative and serious problem that we're dealing with both the environment and, of course, the cost to the island. the interview, it's like, you know, hey, I'm going to bring this new technology in. And then of course it goes completely haywire because of our porous soil here. And we're not surrounded by a bunch of clay and, you know, it ends up, you know, volatile organic compounds end up in the ocean and it's really bad. So mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, saying, hey, we're going to deal with it. You know, I see a, you know, the officials and, you know, going and bypassing the system and just being like, let's try this new thing. And then it spiraling into the problems that we have now, as opposed to dealing with corporate counsel. And then of course, corporate counsel fighting these things in order to save the island money, because that's their duty. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what is your thoughts on corporate counsel, their role associated and, you know, making things transparent?
Well, you know, their role is to advise the mayor and the council, and you're correct with the premise of saving money or not getting entangled into any legal issues, but we can disagree. And for example, you make the case with the injection wells and the environment. Environment is about our economy and it's money. And let's take the West Maui injection well. I voted for that resolution to let's just settle and not take it to the Supreme Court. And if we're talking money, we spent millions, another hundreds of thousands more just by doing that. And we lost, you know, so which is one reason why I was disappointed the mayor didn't listen to the council. You know, now you look at the case from Ma'alaya and their injection wells. The mayor was hesitant to support an appropriation to a contribution from the county to develop a new wastewater system. And instead, I guess his proposal was to just hook up to that new Waikapu town development, which is okay, but it's still going to take more time. Or I think also another proposal was to wait for a whole new Central Maui wastewater system. And that's going to take a gazillion years and a ton of money, but we need to address the problem now. So my preference was to, hey, let's appropriate monies and do a public-private partnership with someone to do some type of treatment plant out there in Ma'alaya. So I'm sure he was probably advised by Corp Counsel, who's telling him this is the best way to do it. I mean, that's their opinion, but I would take it to a different side or perspective. So I think we need to just do it in the most expeditious way we can, whether it be with new technology or try existing technology, but just maybe do it better, you know? So again, it's about being open to all ideas and not locking yourself in just to one type of technology, or because it was done this way, it's good, but that may have worked many years ago, that was probably the thought process for Ma'alaya and injection wells when first put in, right? Everybody thought, okay, this is the best way to do it. But now over time, we've seen that, hey, maybe this wasn't the best idea.
Mm-hmm. Now, since we have to kind of close this thing down, we've taken up a nice hour of your time and we appreciate it. How do people follow you? Where's your website? Give us some information so we can share with the community.
Okay. Well, I'm on Instagram and go to votemikemolina.com. I don't have a very pretty illustrious website. I still need some funding for some social media to expand that a little bit. So I'm truly grassroots, but if anyone out there is listening that would like to help, or call me at my cell phone too. I'm just old fashioned. I like to just to talk to people one-to-one. I mean, yeah, you can look at the website and see my statements, but it's not the same versus just talking to the candidate one-to-one. My number is area code 808-264-4859. You can email me at MGM for mayor at, excuse me. Let me give you a better email. If you want to just direct your comments or questions to me, do it to my personal email at mjm.mauicounty@gmail.com. I love to hear from people and I don't mind sharing my personal address or phone number, because it's all about bringing people closer to you. I mean, how much more closer can you get? I mean, if you want to come visit me at my house, you do that, but please call me. I don't know what my wife would say to that, but you tell me where you want me to meet you. I am happy to meet with you one-to-one. If you want to set up a coffee hour or, you know, in your home, you're interested in doing that, I will be there. You just tell me when and where.
Nice.
Because, you know, you can have an organization that can put out all of this beautiful social media stuff on you, but you don't really know the person until you meet that individual one-to-one.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So
thank
yeah.
you so much, everybody, for coming here today. Of course, I always appreciate Byron Yap with setting these interviews up and co-hosting. I could not do this radio show without him. He is amazing, and I'm always referring business to him. For anybody who's looking for a loan, definitely feel free to reach out to Byron Yap. And you want to tell us a little bit about your website and where to go?
Ours is, what is that, axiahomeloans.com. Go on there and you can find me under Byron Yap. Check it out. We're in Kihei. Our office is in Kihei on Lipoa Street.
And Mike Molina, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time today and coming and having an introduction to the people of Maui. Yeah, that's it. People of Maui. And also, if you would like to listen to this show and other interviews, feel free to always join us at MauiRealEstateRadio.com. I'm Clint Hansen with Maui Luxury Real Estates. And we are broadcasting on the KAOI Radio Group at 1110 AM. 98.7 FM, but you can listen to this to wherever you find your podcasts or good old-fashioned YouTube. Have a great day and aloha.